audience as well.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm here to talk to you about how we got IPv6 at the Rail Tier 1. Hopefully you're aware from Martin's talk this morning that we do finally have IPv6 at the Rail Tier 1. So you may recognise me from previous HEPIX talks. I've stood up in front of you and talked to you about QATOR. I've stood up in front of you and talked to you about CEF at the Tier 1. Talked to you about temperature monitoring once as well in Prague. But today I'm going to be talking about IPv6 configuration, which is one of the many things that I get involved in. I tend to get sucked into lots of different technical projects. And first, an apology to the people who actually did all the actual real work. I was not involved in most of this. I just have a story to tell you about how we got here. I got involved right at the last minute when we started panicking about how we were actually going to allocate addresses in this massive, new, vast world of IPv6. So, yeah, particular thanks to Alistair Dewhurst, who has been driving this at WLCG level, but also locally, because he sits across the office from most of us. And the networking team, who, once they got actual money to actually start spending on hardware, moved very, very quickly to get this all in place for us. So, yeah, big thanks to them. And, of course, Tim Folks, locally, who's been making sure that we've had all the equipment and cables plugged in. So, this is what I'll be covering. Hopefully you all know the goals and motivations for doing this. Now, it's because of our need to do things as a WLCG Tier 1 that we want IPv6 access. We want to provide site support for sites that are only IPv6, and there are a few of those around the world now that only have IPv6 allocations and have no IPv4 addresses at all. And part of the challenge, at the STFC level at least, is we have no shortage of IPv4 at all. So if you get high enough in any organization, you'll get to a point where people say, well, there's not a problem. We've got lots of IPv4. You don't need your IPv6. As I said, the networking team took this very seriously. They've actually been thinking about it for a couple of years. Now, yeah, so IPv6 for us means IPv6 for the entire of STFC, and it means a procedure and processes for allocating addresses. It means cooperation across the whole thing. As I said, the networking team have been thinking about it since 2015, which is great, but WLCG is not the only user of the Tier 1's networks or STFC's networks, and while we're trying to meet WLCG's requirements, we've got to stop and think about who else we're breaking. But the biggest problem we faced was legacy infrastructure. So we had some routers in our path, which Martin will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of them was bought in 1998 and was still providing critical data access paths, and yeah, something like that. There's no IPv6 support at all. I mean, IPv6 was a thing at that point. There was an RFC for it, but no one was building hardware that did it. As we got a bit further on, as you'll see in a minute, we found hardware that just didn't work properly. Firewalls that don't have offload support for IPv6 and do it all on the CPU, so performance sucks. All things that say, yes, we do IPv6, but then just don't. I was going to show you a whole diagram of the network, but I won't, because I just wanted to highlight all the things that were broken. So from 2015 moving forward, as I said, the networking team started to take this pretty seriously. They started working through the network from the bit that connects to Janet as our ISP and other ISPs for commercial things. Trying to split IPv6 off at the top level to avoid all the broken infrastructure, and built us a separate testbed. So we've had a few hosts like PerfSonar and GocDB running on that testbed. And then they began the long, laborious process. Excuse me. Let's get some water. Of replacing that infrastructure. Right, so I'm just going to step through what they actually did, because this is probably a summation of a year and a half's work. So this is where we started with every piece of hardware on here was running production work at the time. There were a lot of links missing which were providing IPv4 networking. And as we step through, I'll show you as IPv6 connectivity shows up, it'll show up as a series of links. So we start with a testbed. Right off at that end of the network over there, which basically takes all the traffic coming in. If it's IPv6, gets shunted off to the side through a separate firewall, which IPv6 worked with, which was set up separately, and then into a separate little network off the side. So you've got the whole of STFC off here, and the tier one and everything else, with no IPv6 at all. And then they started looking at it and realized that every single device there with a star on it needed a firmware update in order to actually work at all. And then they could start the process of actually activating the testbed. And then this needed some new configuration added to it, and then the testbed can be moved onto the production firewall. And then we could set up a services subnet to actually start hanging things like DNS off, so we could have IPv6 accessible DNS, because if you want to run services, you need DNS that talks IPv6. And then we get to the point where the OPNR needs replacing, because, as I said, it was 1998 hardware or something like that and just didn't work at all. That took several attempts. Talk to Martin if you want to know more about that process. And we end up with a point where we could potentially start doing OPN peering on over IPv6. So we've just covered about 12 months' work there in a few seconds. And then we get this question, which is, how the hell do we allocate IPv6 addresses in the tier one? And after that, we can probably get to this point, and then we could just connect the tier one, and then we can get rid of all that stuff, and then we start BGP appearing with Janet, and then we've got our full production, everything connected. This hasn't happened yet, so this would be late this year. Hopefully, the entire site now is connected up in parallel with IPv4, IPv6. The approach they've taken here is actually to build separate infrastructure, as in separate cabling, on running on separate VLANs, apart from the point where it gets to our network, where the original plan was to put in separate VLANs, but again, speak to Martin, the size and complexity of our network and implementing VLANs in 2 days across 200 switches seemed like a bad idea. So there was a couple of cables coming into our routers, and then it just ends on our network. So, at this point, we had IPv6 capable networks, and all we had left to do is that. It's simple, right? So now we've got the last 6 months of work to do to get to today. So allocate subnets, agree addressing schemes, configure hosts, configure firewalls, and ACLs, expose services, and yeah, then we're done. So each STFC site has been allocated an IPv6/48 by Janet, which is nice of them. Which is good, because that's lots of addresses, and we don't need to worry about things. So we can actually start to do something more clever with the addresses, we hope. So STFC spent some time thinking about this, in particular Robin Tasker, before he retired, I think, came up with some plans and decided that actually we can embed some meaning in the addresses. I'm sure other people have thought about this as well. So what we've got here is the Janet allocation, and then we've got this little magical bit on here, which is the STFC allocation. We've got this bit here. So we've got Janet, the RAL site, which has been allocated. We get one of these per campus. So RAL gets this block, and then we've got these four nibbles to allocate some meaning to each subnet before they get handed off to our projects. So we have some of these. So what they've gone with is, the first bit is, we're probably going to screw this up, so let's give ourselves 16 chances at it. And the first number here is a version number for the entire addressing plan. We're on version 1 already. So we already screwed it up once. So we're currently on version 1 because we started on version 0. Then the next one is the network type, which actually became department. And then the network subtype, which basically became project. And then the last digit is left for the owner of the subnet to decide, and we've made that our version of our internal addressing scheme, because we're kind of probably going to screw this up as well. I mean, we probably already have, but we don't realize it. Which gets us onto this part, which is our internal version 0 of the addressing screen, which probably isn't going to work, but it's simply working now. Which is based on the assumption that we have no shortage of IPv4, and we have less of a shortage of IPv6, so we're going to put both on everything, and therefore everything will be dual stack. We don't have an IT address management system. We don't have any way of recording or tracking IPv6 addresses. So let's just embed the IPv4 address in the IPv6 address. There's an RFC for that. So let's just steal part of that, access it automatically, reduce it to a Boolean flag that says I want a dual stack machine. If the owner of the machine says true, then we just do this. So we say the left-hand side is all the STFC subnet bit, right-hand side is all zeros followed by the IP address in hex, or if you want to write it out like that, that's also actually a valid IPv6 address, and that's that, that's done. So that's our addressing plan version 0. It's very simple, and it doesn't require us to build another database to hold that information, We could have just gone, well, let's just allocate them from one upwards, but then we'd have to record which one was on which host. It also means that you can generate your entire DNS zone file with a sed script from your IPv4 DNS zone file. So that's pretty time-saving. So, on to future plans. So at the moment, we have a perf sonar box, or two, running IPv6 over our production networks, and I have been assured that the latency and bandwidth are in the ballpark for IPv4, therefore it's working. So that's cool. Caster, not going to upgrade it, not going to go dual stack. It's on an old, horrible, unmaintained legacy configuration environment, although recently they managed to get rid of Puppet 2 because the server crashed and they couldn't work out how to fix it. So we decommissioned that. And from what we understand, CERN don't plan to upgrade Caster to dual stack either, but maybe CTA will be, probably will be, as it's a layer on top of the current Caster kind of tape archive code. That's, you know, that's probably fine. Don't know what we're doing about tape archive stuff. Martin and others will be very interested to talk to people about their tape. Echo, on the other hand, we definitely will go dual stack with. We currently have one of five of our gateways is dual stack. We were going to try and do it all at the same time, but it was decided very wisely, I think, that actually probably getting a production storage system into production on the IP addressing scheme that we understand was probably the most sensible thing to do and get data into it before trying to also do IPv6. But if there's no problems with the gateway by June, we'll have them all dual stack, which would more than meet our April 2018 tier one storage requirement, I think. And then on to services. So in this order, I'm not going to read them all out, you can read them. FDS, CPMFS, that order. The private cloud is actually, so we have two private clouds at the moment. One is Open Nebula, one is OpenStack. The OpenStack one is where the IPv6 functionality will be exposed to all users, although you can do IPv6 on both of them at the moment, but you have to know what you're doing. But yes, it'll be exposed in the GUI and the web client to users by the point at which we decommission the Open Nebula cloud. And then by April 2018, everything will be dual stack by default because we'll set the flag to true. And it'll just work, really. So the RHEL network's now ready to confer to support IPv6 services. There's still some work to do, a lot of testing to do. We're running IPv6 on our production network. It's working. The perf sonar says it's working. And we're ready to go dual stack real soon now. Thanks. Any questions?
Okay, questions?
So one question I see a lot when people go or deploy IPv6 is, how do you know the firewalls at the host level are correctly configured? Because the, you know, did you remember to type IP6 tables instead of just IP tables? Did you guys go through any additional compliance or audits or anything like that to look for these sorts of things that people might have forgotten, or is that just what they should have been doing anyway?
No.
Okay.
So that's the sort of thing we're going to have to do on a service by service basis as we roll out. But yeah, the default configuration is block all IPv6 traffic. So hopefully people will realize that they have to open the ports, which is a nice place to be, because if we were to try and implement that IPv4, we'd break everything. But because we had no IPv6 traffic, we can put a default rule on of block everything. And then now you've asked for IPv6, oh, have you thought about opening the firewall holes you need? Well, it'd be nice to do that on IPv4 as well, of course. That's the benefit of hindsight. But no, don't mention compliance. Someone will try and audit us. Don't do that.
Okay, additional questions? Somebody should think of a question, because I think we're about 20 minutes ahead.
That means we can have more coffee, right?
Oh. So on the slide with address planning, you mentioned address plan version or something.
Yeah, this one. So there's two versions.
Yes, address plan version. So what use do you foresee for that?
So that assumes that everything from the right of here is, it turns out to be a bad idea. So Because this is complex, we might make a complete mess of everything on the right-hand side. So we might decide that the department and project is the wrong way to organize our subnets. If we put that at the top level, there'd be no way to change that. But very wisely, someone decided, it was probably Robin, it probably decided that we're going to screw it up, so give ourselves 16 chances to get it right. So the test bed, which was the very small purple blob on the right-hand side of the network, was version 0 of the network address plan. And that started allocating addresses from 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way upwards. Now, that turned out to be a terrible idea. So we're on version 1 now, which is allocating by department and project. And then internally in our teams, we've decided that we want a version number as well because we're going to screw up this host address thing. Because this IPv4 thing seems like a great idea now. But in 3 years' time, it might be the worst idea we've ever had. I don't know. Embedding version numbers, it's like embedding version numbers in APIs. It seems like the right thing to do. Does that answer your question?
Well, considering the URLs.
Oh, the reason is we don't trust ourselves. That's the real reason.
In this IPv4 mapping scheme, mm-hmm. what do you have for addressing IPv6 only hosts?
Nope.
No.
Nope. We have no shortage of IPv4. RHEL has everything that starts with 130.246. We should be fine.
So, thinking of other horror stories I've heard from IPv6 deploys, one of them is scalability of firewalls differing between V4 and V6. Have you done any scale tests on the RHEL firewall to see if it actually...
Terrible.
What?
It's terrible. That's the firewall that has the no offload support for IPv6, so it currently does it all on the CPU.
Ah,
so it's like 16 or 32 hardware offload DSPs, and it does all the IPv6 stuff on its two CPUs.
So there's a good possibility if CMS starts moving things over V6 RHEL firewall.
But don't worry, they've got money to replace it, so that's fine.
Yeah,
we need to break it in order to get them to replace it quickly.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's actually really annoying because the other campus had the next model up of the firewall, which does it all in hardware. So if we were cheeky, we could probably drive up there with a van. Yeah, we drive up there with a van and just swap them when no one's noticed. They won't notice.
Additional questions? Okay, let's thank James again.